All right, good evening. Time being 5:30, I would like to open the meeting. Welcome to all of my colleagues and to our staff this evening. It's my pleasure to welcome you to this meeting on Monday the 7th of August 2023. We don't have anyone in the public gallery this evening, but welcome to anyone who is watching along at home on YouTube. Being 5:30pm, I now officially declare the meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with council's policy, I will ask the general manager that the recording has started.
Confirm, Mayor.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reek, Deputy Mayor Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the General Manager, Mr Arnold, Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, the Acting Director of Environment Development and Community Services, Ms Salisbury, the Manager of Finance, Mr Jones, and Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have apologies this evening from Councillor Cordova. On page one now, confirmation of minutes. The motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting No. 14, held on the 17th of July 2023, be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Workshops held since the last council meeting. We had two workshops, the first in relation to Kingston Beach Local Area Traffic Management Plan and Dog Management Policy, and the next one in relation to Southern Regional Waste Management Authority and Kingborough Waste Services. We turn now to declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest? No? Thank you. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. We don't have any members of the public here, so there are no questions without notice from the public. Questions on notice from the public. There is one from Mr Dean Winter, MP, with an officer's response from Ms Tyler Moore in relation to the statewide planning scheme. For the information of those members of the community, if you do wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the relevant form on our website or by sending it via email to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question? Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Could council staff please explain the arrangements for council officers policing parking matters on state roads?
Mr Smee?
Through you, Mayor. Our compliance staff will respond to matters relating to traffic issues, but in relation to state roads, I'd probably need more detail as to what the issue was, if it was an abandoned vehicle, for example, or a breach of road rules. I probably need more information to be able to respond to the question.
A parking infringement, Mr Smee.
Mr Smee.
Through you, Mayor. It may be best if I take the question on notice and get advice from our compliance staff as to our exact process. I know we would play a role, but yeah, it's probably best if I get information so I'm providing a correct answer.
Councillor Street.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Would it be possible to receive an update on the Somerleys Road pedestrian underpass project and what work's been done to date and any approximate timeframes when we hope to get the work underway?
Sure. Mr Reeve can assist us with that.
Through you, Mayor, yes, still going through the design at the moment. It's a fairly tricky location because of the amount of room we've actually got to play with and some of the other environmental considerations that we have to manage as well at the same time. So it's sort of still tracking where we expect to be tracked. More than likely, in terms of the construction, we'll be looking at trying to minimise inconvenience. So it'll look at some school holidays times, probably towards the main school holiday period. So it'll be next calendar year, early next calendar year is what we're aiming for construction.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Two questions from me. Noting there is a Providing Better Facilities for Sporting Clubs grant that we're all alerted to last week. I'm just wondering what is the process for us to decide what sporting club we would apply for in regards to this, if we do apply?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, yes, we would like to apply, bearing in mind that the criteria for this grant requires that the project be ready to go and that there's a 20% applicant contribution. So our process would be to go back to our capital bids, where all of those projects have been through a scoping and consultation process. They have a business case. They are, in effect, ready to go. We would either look to go with an existing project where we already have funds allocated and value add to that, or for a project that may have missed out, but that would certainly be our process to ensure that we're going with a project that's already been through a fairly rigorous assessment process.
Great.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. And another one, I noticed yesterday when I went to park my bike at Blackmans Bay Beach near the restaurant precinct area that the bike racks have been removed. There has been some planting and some other works there, and I'm just wondering, will the bike racks be replaced?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, I would imagine so. I imagine they've just been taken out temporarily, but I'm happy to take that on notice and provide a reply.
Councillor Dean, and welcome back.
Thank you, Mayor. A question for me around an incident that happened last week on Channel Court and around a place where a metro bus lodged itself on the main road so that traffic at school pick-up time was quite affected. This is something that has been happening for many years, so I was just wondering if we could have an update from maybe you or the General Manager as to any discussions with Metro Tasmania about that.
Certainly. I'll ask the General Manager to answer that. It was very inconvenient for people who were travelling through the Channel Highway at that time, particularly as it's when schools were out, and it would seem to me to be driver error, but I'm sure the General Manager can provide some advice.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Dean, I made contact with the CEO of Metro Tas today. I've received advice back that the operations team at Metro Tas are investigating and that particular incident and also looking at more appropriate options and driver awareness moving forward.
Councillor Dean.
Just to follow up on that, I mean, in my time, just in on council in the last 8 or 9 months, there's been a number of these incidents. This was obviously a really bad one because it covered nearly the whole street and came at a peak time. I'm just wondering, did those discussions, apart from driver training, because this is something that's been happening for decades, to be honest, apart from driver training, were there any other options discussed with the manager of Metro Tas?
General Manager.
Not specifically through you, Mayor, but Councillor Dunn, I am mindful that in the last 18 to 24 months, there has been a very high turnover rate of drivers at Metro, and I suspect that that may play a part in some of these occurrences.
Councillor Dean.
And my last follow-up, just on that, if any discussions, or the next time discussions happen with, could it be put to Metro Tas about discussing other options, because clearly it's a driver issue, driver training issue, but like, and I understand your point completely, but are there any other options apart from, you know, continually Metro TAS committing to additional driver training, given that the history shows that it doesn't always work out successfully? Were there other options such as installing signage either up at Baringa or at Arana Place where the clear the issues happen, where people, where drivers are in not turning around where they should be? So whether that's an issue for us or DSG, state growth, sorry, could that, I just ask that be put on the record, that that be floated with Metro TAS as a potential option?
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Happy to float that option.
Any further questions? Okay. Questions on notice from councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice. Petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. And petitions received in the last period. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. We turn now to page 4, officers' reports to council, short stay accommodation, with a recommendation on page 8. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Antoli, seconder in Councillor Richardson. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. This report discusses the impact of whole dwelling short stay visitor accommodation in Kingra and some options for mitigating its effect on rental affordability. The municipality faces a housing and rental crisis with limited commercial accommodation options for tourists. While short stay accommodation can benefit the visitor economy and provide housing for newcomers and seasonal workers, it may also reduce the availability of long-term rentals, contributing to some rental price increase. So the report investigates this and overall concludes that this generally is not the case in Kingra. The report outlines several options to regulate short stay accommodation, including differential rating, but it recommends against immediate implementation due to lack of concrete evidence regarding its impact on the long-term rental market in Kingra. So instead, this report suggests requesting the Tasmanian government to actively monitor the situation and also for LGAT to address it by continuing to implement its statement on housing. What is interesting in summary is the report advises against immediate regulation of short stay accommodation in Kingra, but it emphasises the importance of monitoring its impact in case things change. And interestingly, it dispels some myths about short stay accommodation, with about 50% of all short stay accommodation facilities being on Bruny Island herself, which in itself locks in, or in effect locks in, income to the wider community there due to the lack of public accommodation on the island. So apart from Bruny, short-term stay accommodation has little impact on the availability of whole house rentals, and based on the evidence from this report, it also recommends that further regulation on this would probably be a solution looking for a problem. So I recommend the report to our council for discussion.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a procedural question. Can I move to defer it?
You can. That's a procedural motion, which there's no debate on, so you'd need a seconder, and then the motion is put.
Can I please move to defer?
Yep. Do I have a seconder? So I've got a procedural motion for Councillor Midgley, and I've got a seconder in Councillor Fox. Do we have any... Unfortunately, there's no opportunity for you to explain why you're moving a procedural motion, which is a bit of a flaw under the meeting regulations procedures, so I'll have to put that to the vote. The question is that the matter be deferred. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
Against.
No. Okay, a show of hands is required. All those in favour of deferring the matter is Councillors Fox, Dean, Bain and Midgley. Oh, sorry, and Gladride. Sorry. I didn't forget you were there. Sorry. Apologies, Deputy Mayor. And those against is Councillors Antoli, Richardson, Street and Reet. So the motion to defer is passed. Well, that's truncated the agenda somewhat for this evening. So we turn now to page 9. The annual plan for 2023-24, with a recommendation on page 10. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Councillor Midgley, you still have your light on. Did you want to move it? No. Anybody? See, we're all confused now, so... Deputy Mayor, I've got a mover and the Deputy Mayor. I'm looking for a seconder, Councillor Midgley. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. So we are considering adopting the annual plan for 2023-24. There was a whole body of work that has happened prior to this report coming to Council. There was a strategic plan which was adopted back in 2019, and at the special council meeting this year we adopted the estimates of revenue and expenditure for the 2023-24 financial year. So the plan has three strategic outcomes. One is a council that engages with and enables its community. The second is to deliver quality infrastructure and services, and the third is sustaining the natural environment whilst facilitating development into the future. I believe the plan is clear and achievable. I'm really glad to see that the Climate Change Action Plan has an action item against it. And I am also quite interested in 2.4.1, which is review and improve systems to ensure that we are closing the loop effectively with the customer. I think this is an area where we could definitely do with some improvement, so I'm really pleased to see that it has been highlighted in this plan. So I support its adoption.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Any further contributions? Councillor Dean.
Look, I'm just trying to find it because I didn't have a copy with me over the weekend and I haven't saved the right page. But there's one point on here, because most of the stuff, and it's fantastic, the report, and really well written, and I think actually in terms of giving the community, for those who actually are interested in our strategic direction or what we're up to in the next 12 months, it reads really well, so that's fantastic. But there was one point that, apart from nearly everything that we are on track to I suppose, achieve towards our objectives, there was one about a heritage code for Kingborough, which we obviously haven't tracked. And it does say there somewhere, if I could find it, I can't right now, that we will deliver it in a forthcoming year. So if I could just, as someone who's new to council, just give me a bit of context as to why that hasn't happened and when that might take place and what that is. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, I'd picked up on that one as well and was going to ask it. General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Dean, by way of brief background, we currently don't have a dedicated heritage planner as such on staff. Notwithstanding, we've identified the need to do further work in that area. Council will be aware that our current available resources are focused on hopefully finalising interactions with the Town Planning Commission with a view to getting the new planning scheme on public exhibition. And once that engagement process and exhibition process has been undertaken, that may free up the resources within the available budget for the financial year. So that's been the reason for the delay.
Councillor Dean.
So just to clarify then, we're waiting for our new scheme to be advertised, and within the advertisement are you saying that there is going to be room to work on the heritage overlays during that phase? Are you waiting for it to be signed off and then staff post the, once the new plan is signed off, that's then we'll look at the heritage overlays?
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Some of that work is progressing at the moment, but once we get final sign-off from the Town Planning Commission, we will know exactly what it is we're putting on exhibition, and then that will enable our strategic planners to focus on not only the heritage overlay, but any other overlays that require further attention to detail during that public exhibition process.
Any further contributions? No. I just wanted to make a brief contribution in relation to this, because I think that on the face of it, people could see strategic plans as being, or annual plans as being, just sort of the documents that go and sit on the bookshelf and that nobody takes any notice of, but it's very much not the case in local government. We prepare an annual plan each year so that the community can see how we are working towards the strategic objectives within our strategic plan. And so it really does mean that we're, I guess, everything that we're doing, whether it be a council decision or the work of staff in implementing decisions, has a framework in which it sits, and it demonstrates to the community that what we're doing is not just a bunch of ad hoc thought bubbles, but that it all has purpose, and that purpose is trying to achieve those strategic goals and ultimately our vision of having the community at the heart of everything we do. And I would encourage people to read this. It's quite a reasonably user-friendly document to read, because it outlines the breadth of what we do, and it kind of shows to the community that we're not about roads, rates and rubbish. We are, as a council, we are a provider, we're a regulator, we're a facilitator, and we're an advocate for our communities that we live in, because we are the closest level of government to the community in which we all live. So I would encourage people to read this and look at all the things that we are trying to achieve in the next 12 months of this financial year that will continue to work us towards achieving that goal. So I thank the staff for their work. A lot of work goes into the preparation of the annual plan, but also in relation to then the activities that have to be undertaken in conjunction with this. And of course we get quarterly reports against the progress on this, and that is really important, that there is that level of accountability there, and to me that is about transparency and good governance. So I thank staff for their work on this and continued work into the future. Deputy Mayor, did you want to sum up? No? Okay, I'll put the motion as printed on the screen, moved by the Deputy Mayor and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried. We turn now to page 36, Kingston Beach Flood Mitigation Investigation, with a recommendation on page 39. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Midgley. Seconder, Deputy Mayor. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. It's an important report, this one, and if we read the whole attachment and the study, it's quite a big investigation. There's great information and recommendations. So the purpose of this report is to summarise the results of the Kingston Beach Flood Mitigation Investigation and also seeks our endorsement, for Council's endorsement, for several recommendations made in the study report. So really the recommendations, which I'm just moving to, summarise, there's quite a few recommendations there, so I won't read them out. But basically, I guess it's around undertaking the community engagement with residents to communicate the results of the study. And there's further investigation to occur. There's a long-term strategy. And there's more mapping and studies, I guess, to be put on the website, which don't know if they all are there at the moment. And there's an agreement to the flood extents, replacing the existing flood extents on the Kingborough Flood Awareness map, and also the point G about how it states investigates the establishment of a community education program with SES to provide information on what to do before, during and after a flood event. And as we are now experiencing in August, here I am in a short sleeve shirt, in the middle of winter, we are in such a changing climate environment. We're seeing what's happening overseas. This is such an important study and such a great investigation that happened in a few years ago. It's great that new people are moving to Kingston Beach, so it's great that we can keep people aware of this and that the community consultation can occur. So I fully support the recommendation and look forward to hearing any other comments or debate.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox and then the Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm very pleased to get this report, because it's an indication that there is a lot more information about at the moment on this issue, and the technology available to us is improving all the time. So it's really updating the information we already had to be more accurate, I presume, and to get the community behind some of the proposals that are included in this report, including flood mitigation in some areas, or raising a footpath, providing options for people to consider. All of them come out a huge cost, though, and I think it'll be very interesting to see the response from the community and how we can deal with that response and how what we can actually do in this environment. I'm going to read a few questions which I have been discussing with staff over the last few days, and I feel that maybe some of these issues that I'm raising are slightly outside the scope of the plan, but at the same time, having the historical background that I have, I thought it would be worthwhile to put these issues on the table. And I will read what I've written. The golf course reclaimed land is the heading of the first issue. There seems to be very little information in the report relating to the geomorphological impacts of the historical land reclamation in the early 1960s by the golf course. This piece of land, connected by a bridge from Balmoral Road near Rollins Avenue, was used by council as a tip, like a base tip, in my youth in the 1950s. I understand from council staff that there are no records available to show when this reclamation and extension of the golf course was done, and whether the golf course actually is owned by the golf course at this point in the land. The Land and Information System Tasmania list, in brackets, map shows a strip of land on the other side of Browns River opposite the houses as being not part of the golf course. This land could potentially be reinstated as a salt marsh to reduce the river speed and siltation of the river mouth, and may also provide access to pedestrians and bicycles along the river. My first question relating to this is, what geomorphic influence does the golf course land reclamation have on the surrounding land and water flow upstream and downstream? Could council formally consider the removal of the golf course's reclaimed land along the river to alleviate the flooding of the surrounding houses, particularly on the opposite side of the river at Beach Road and Balmoral Road? The second topic is the Christopher...
Sorry, can we just get Mr. Reeve to respond to that first question, please?
Sure.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, look, in terms of the reclamation, we don't have a lot of information on that. I certainly bow to Councillor Fox's memory and ability to actually remember what actually happened back there in the 1960s. Not a lot of stuff on our records associated with that, and certainly when we did the flood study, it was based on what is on the ground at the moment, not necessarily on any reclamation. I guess if we were going to look into the legalities of the reclamation and whether or not council had agreed to it or whether it actually had happened without council agreement, I guess it would need some sort of understanding from council whether they wish to pursue that further with the viewpoint of actually reversing that reclamation. Otherwise, we'd be doing a lot of work for not a lot of purpose. But certainly, we could actually do some additional modelling associated with what that might mean if that section of land wasn't there, as to the effect that it might actually have on the properties, particularly the properties on the other side. But at this stage, that wasn't considered as part of the original study.
Thank you, Mr. Reeve. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. The Christopher Johnson Memorial Reserve. It was created by council in the late 1960s or early 70s at the mouth of the river. It's also partially a reclaimed salt marsh. 20 years ago, the Sea Scouts applied to council to extend their boat shed to include a club room. This development application was passed by council but was subsequently refused by the planning tribunal due to flood risk in a coastal area, leading to the Sea Scouts club rooms being built at the Snug River mouth. My question relating to this is, could council formally consider the impact of restoring the Christopher Johnson Memorial Reserve to its natural state as a salt marsh and natural floodplain? And thirdly, could council formally acknowledge the Christopher Johnson Memorial Reserve infrastructure as being at risk? And could Council formally make long-term plans to abandon or relocate the existing park infrastructure, including the toilets, play equipment, picnic shelter, car park and boat shed, to higher ground? Thank you.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, I guess there's a couple of parts to this question. At the moment there, we obviously have a section of low-lying land there that will probably be affected with sea level rise. So the chances are one of the options available to Council, and probably one of the most likely options there, will be to retreat from that area. Most of the assets that are down there would be suitable to relocate, so any playground equipment, the toilet, the new toilet that's down there. So that's a possibility for those particular assets. However, it's probably worthwhile bearing in mind, in terms of the impact from sea level, it's probably going to be a little while, quite a few years down the track there. So many of the assets that are down there are probably going to be towards the end of their life at that stage in any case. So may not be necessarily suitable for relocation. But I think if we intended to actually make that decision of retreat, we would be taking that into account for whatever developments we actually put to and from that section of land, because we do know that it is likely to be affected by sea level rise, but sometime in the future. Probably the other point that I would actually make is there is a couple of larger dollar assets, one which we've just put in place, which is a toilet block, which I've already mentioned, but the other one, which is still on the cards there, which would still have a life of about 40 or 50 years if we put it in place, would be the revamp of the pedestrian bridge across Browns River. So once again, we would consider that in light of when we would expect that section of land to be impacted, and whether or not whatever we put in place there, we would actually get value out of it for that period of time.
Thank you, Mr. Reeve. Any further questions, Councillor Fox?
No, I appreciate the responses. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I have the Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Question.
Yeah, okay. I'll come to you. I've got a list. So it's the Deputy Mayor, then Councillor Antoli, and then Councillor Midgley with a question.
Thank you. Yes, so it was very sobering to read this report. While sea level rise is a while away, it was actually only this year that the SES had a evacuation alert up for Kingston Beach after a heavy rain. So the large rain events are probably what's causing the most risk in the immediate future. So it's excellent that we're thinking about this. I'm really pleased that there's a community engagement process. I think we need to start having those hard conversations with the residents down there in this area. And I'm really pleased that we have put on a climate change officer, or are soon to put on a climate change officer, because it'll be the role of this particular person to keep an eye on when grants are available for things like sea walls and different things. So it's really great that we've got this study done, and that climate change officer can then make use of the study and apply for money as needed. So I'm happy to adopt the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I believe it's a climate adaptation officer. Is that correct, Mayor?
Correct.
Thank you. We don't want someone in charge of climate change. small typo on page 38, 4.9.2, the very, very last sentence. I believe it should say H5 dash unsafe for people or vehicles, instead of people of vehicles.
I would say so.
Yep. Not that I'm trying to be pedantic, but I suppose to some people out there this will matter. My other question is, and I may have missed something, so this report was lodged 20 months ago. Why are we hearing about it and discussing it now?
Thank you. You've taken my question.
And why? Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
This is not aimed as a criticism, but why was it not lodged much sooner than this?
I was curious why we've had it for that period of time as well. Mr. Reeve, can you assist?
Through you, Mayor. Look, it's not that uncommon, even though it seems like it's a long period of time there, because when we receive a report there, we do actually review it internally, and then quite often there'll be other questions we might actually have that we put back as well at the same time. But it's also fair to say that, particularly in my area with the hydraulics unit, they have been fairly under-resourced for a period of time there. So this one has taken a little bit longer than normal in terms of actually getting the final feedback. So at this stage there, we normally like to get a turnover that's sometime within about 6 months or so. So it's a little bit longer than normal.
Thank you. Councillor Antolis.
Thank you. So if I could ask a follow-up question potentially to the General Manager, would a climate adaptation officer be maybe the first natural responder to a report like this internally?
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Antolli, the Climate Change Adaptation Officer would be one of a number of staff that would respond, yes.
I suppose, again, this is not a criticism, more of an observation. If I'm a member of the public, they might say, well, this is pretty important to us. We would have loved this to have been given some priority resourcing well before a 20-month wait. How would we respond to that potential criticism?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So this isn't just one report. There's been a series of reports that have been down Kingston Beach for flooding. So the first one goes back to about 2016. Mm. So this is just an update of that particular report. So that's not that unusual. In terms of the report coming to council, even though before it's been formally adopted by council, we still take that into consideration for any of our planning decisions, for example. So any draft report gets taken into account for planning decisions or any other assessments that we might actually be making within that Kingston Beach area. As you notice from the recommendations, some of the actions going forward aren't overnight actions. Some of those ones will take a little bit of time there. Even the difficult part in terms of running a consultation exercise with the various people that are affected down there is quite a detailed and quite a difficult thing to actually do. There was some limited consultation with residents back when we did the original report in 2016. So obviously there's been some changes. There's different properties that are now not likely to be affected, and other properties that may have changed slightly in terms of how they're affected. So running that process will take some time. So you can expect that to go over quite a number of months within the resources we've actually got to actually apply.
I'm still struggling that we've taken so long. After the major weather event in 2018 that saw Channel Court completely half destroyed and all the damage that was done, I just would have thought that we would have given something like this much higher priority to respond to. I'm really struggling with that as an advocate for the community, because this is essentially a community safety report.
Mr. Reeve.
Yeah, look, I can only repeat what I actually said before. Certainly from our perspective there, it's not as if it hasn't been given a priority. As I said, we still use the information that actually comes from this report. I guess what we're actually saying here in terms of the formal council endorsement there is looking at some of the next steps that actually come from here, which includes some of that consultation, which includes actually some of the dealings with some of the other stakeholders as well at the same time. So it sort of needs to come to council to actually get that formal formal endorsement from that. So it's not as if nothing's been done between now and 2021, because aspects of this report certainly have been used.
Okay, well, that's comforting. Thank you. My final one, if I may, Mayor. Consultation, the next steps, what's the roadmap look like on that?
Mr. Reeve.
It's very much in the embryonic stages, so this will be a discussion I'll need to have with our communications officer in terms of that. I mean, the last time we did some of this communication there, we had some drop-in type sessions that we ran with the community. We sent some information out to some of the affected properties to say where they actually sat with things. So it's likely it'll follow a similar sort of format. But the main thing we'll be concentrating upon is the fact that this just builds on previous work we've done in the area, as compared to saying this one's just come out of left field, because it hasn't. It's actually just an update of a previous report. And the good thing about the update is it hasn't got worse, it's got better. So I think that's a good news part of the story.
I agree with you. Thank you. Thank you for taking those questions.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. No, she's got a question. She can put contributions first.
I have questions. So, Councillor Dean, you can go before me.
No, because you haven't spoken yet.
Look, I really just wanted to clarify what we're adopting and what we're supporting here, because it's not entirely clear to me. Are we adopting, you know, the entire study that comes with it, or are we adopting parts of it in terms of updated modelling? Because 10C, the recommendation, states that we're going to further investigate and consider identified options, because the WMA Water have proposed on page 92 of the agenda their flood mitigation scheme with stage 1, 2, 3 over the next 70 years. Whereas 10E states that council will agree to the report and mapping being added to the flood studies on a council's website, because their mitigation scheme talks about, you know, several hundred thousand dollars worth of mobile flood barriers, I think extending and heightening the seawall that we currently have at Kingston Beach. And I note that obviously within the report they're saying we'll those kind of bids, because they're involving their capital bids, will have to come back before us. But which parts of this report are we entirely endorsing, it or just parts of it at this stage? Because that's not clear.
So before I go to Mr. Reeve, my understanding is what we're needing to do is the report has identified a raft of options and a raft of solutions, and further work needs to be done as per point C on all of that. But we will still release the report to the community. That's why it's got point E, that we agree to the report and the mapping being made available on our website, because that will help to inform the community engagement. So it's really important that the community has this up-to-date information. They had the 2016 report. This has now provided us with new information, and then hopefully people will look at that and we will point them towards that when we then go into the community engagement phase. Do you have anything to add, Mr. Reeve?
Through you, ma'am. No, that's a fairly good summary. I mean, probably the only thing I would add to it is just picking up on your point in terms of there's a few different mitigation options that are put in place. That is not untoward for flood studies. Nearly all of them will have a raft of mitigation options. This particular report's not actually asking council to endorse any particular mitigation option. It's just identifying that there is a number of potential options out there, which what all we're really going to do is actually explore those further there and look at whether there's any that we want to go forward with.
And they need to be explored with the community, because, you know, some of the obvious ones that are highlighted in the report, like building a 2-metre seawall along Browns River, I imagine that the people who purchase those properties purchase them because of the outlook they have towards the river and the golf course, and they probably would have an objection to a 2-metre high wall being built because of what it might do to their property values and their enjoyment and outlook of their property. So the community engagement is going to be at the heart of this, and getting them to tell us what they see as acceptable solutions once they understand the level of risk.
Yeah, look, I guess my follow-up, you've probably come towards my follow-up there, because I guess my first point is that they've proposed the most efficient and best way of sustaining the area of Kingston Beach, which is outlined through three stages. And so to come back to the point, we've discussed this in a workshop stage in terms of our new coastal hazards policy. So I guess my follow-up question is, how much does this reflect our coastal hazards policy? Because we've agreed, we've endorsed a coastal hazards policy that prioritise, says we are going to take this approach. Yet what I've heard from you is that we still need to go to the, we obviously need to go to the community, I understand, but we have a strict policy on how we will approach these things. So we might be able to go and listen, but I'm struggling with if they're telling us the best way to save Kingston Beach, and we are potentially leaving that, we are endorsing it and at the same time putting it out there, and then just leaving out for the community. Because that's just a real struggle for me. So if I could just understand, how much does this reflect what we've just endorsed last month in terms of our new coastal hazards policy?
Yeah, Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Look, I guess the easier way to look at this is to say that we've had a report done, and the report basically says this is what is likely to actually happen down there. That's one thing. That's the first thing it actually does. It provides some maps there and says, here we go, here's some areas that might actually be affected by particular types of flooding events there. So you draw a line with that one. And then it's actually said, well, you know what, there's a couple of options you might have here. There's a couple of mitigation options that we would recommend to you. There's a couple we don't, because remember, there's a previous report before this that also looked at this, and some of them have already been looked at in terms of options there and have been discounted for various different reasons. But here's a couple of options we suggest. As the Mayor mentioned, when we go out to community consultation and we say, look, one of the options is to put a levee up. Now, levees are good up to a certain event, but then there's potentially a higher risk associated with them if you get a bigger event than that. So these properties then get even more impacted, if you like. So when we go to community consultation there, we may find out that the community has some different viewpoints on that as well at the same time, quite possibly will, but there may also be other things that actually come out as part of those as well. You've already heard one from Councillor Fox there in terms of some land that was potentially reclaimed by the golf course. So there's some other options that we can also model as we go through. So I see this more as an iterative type process, but you've got to start with something in terms of going back to the community to say, this is what it is. Here's some recommended or potential mitigation options for you to consider, and we're interested in your feedback in terms of this side of things, of what that might actually mean. So I think that's really important, and until we actually get that, we're not going to be able to come back to council and have a formalised position on what we want to do. And I think the other point that's well worth made is a couple of the options that we're actually talking about there. They're quite expensive options as well, so they're not cheap. So we would want to put a fair bit of rigour into actually saying that is what we really want to do, and we're happy to take the risk and the benefits that actually come with taking that option.
Councillor Dean.
Terrific, thanks so much. I guess my final point then would maybe just be a request or an idea that, because this will go up as we're endorsing this now, this report from WMA is going to be up on our website, and it might not, this is what I guess I'm suggesting, is that it comes with some explanatory notes to say, because they have proposed exactly what they think, and so we don't want to, and I know residents of Kingston Beach will, if they're knowledgeable, and when we do, will read this and they go, oh my God, they've endorsed 8 proposed flood mitigation stage 1, 2 and 3, they might think that's exactly what's happened. We're going to install mobile barriers, we're going to extend the seawall. So could I maybe just highlight that when that does go up there, that we, as you've explained, pretty much just in a more condensed form to explain exactly that this is recommended but not exactly is subject to change.
I guarantee that we will do that and explain that this is something that is going out for consultation. But as Mr. Reeve said, there has to be a starting point, and we do want to be as open and transparent with the community as we possibly can about what the options are, so that they can start considering them. But I have complete confidence in our team who will do the engagement strategy that we communicate that effectively to residents. Councillor Midgley, I believe you've got a question.
Thank you. A couple of questions. A few have been asked. I'm just wondering how councillors will be kept track of these recommendations, noting there is quite a few there in regards to the outcomes.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Certainly some of these ones here, I would imagine, because it's a fairly big flood report and an important one, and actually goes across one of our most important parts in the whole municipality, I would expect that there'd be some further information that would be provided back to council once we get some further information back from the community as well at the same time. So I don't think it's a set and forget thing. I think you do need to actually understand what that actually is. It would need to come back in any case in some form if we actually look at pursuing any mitigation options. So there will be these opportunities to have that discussion. Whether that's within a future council report or a future council workshop, I guess that remains to be seen. But it depends on what sort of feedback we also get back from the community as well.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. And thanks for the questions around the timing, because I know during my term on council I have sat in a workshop regarding flood studies for Kingston Beach. So
could it have, it was exactly this one, but I guess what is that catalyst then for then, say, a study such like this or a report? What is a catalyst then for that coming to a councillor workshop, I guess, to update us on something that's just some new information, I guess?
Mr. Reeve.
Yeah, look, it does depend a little bit. I mean, we do a number of different flood studies, and some of them just come back to council as a flood study report, and maybe it has less effect on properties and so forth. This particular one is not one that fits into that ilk. This one actually does have a lot of effect on some very high-value properties in an area there which is quite controversial in terms of potential for properties actually flooding. So this would be an example of one where we need to actually take council along on a journey as well. Whether we like it or not, the council will end up coming on that journey there, because no doubt the community will be in touch with council if we don't bring them along on the journey. So I certainly envisage the fact that once we start enacting some of these actions, particularly some of the consultation actions there, that's where council, you know, has some feedback on that.
Thank you. And one further question, Mayor. Sure. Just for people purchasing real estate in this area, and if they are affected, how do they know about this flood study? I think it comes on the purchasing information. Is that correct? I just want to just ensuring that then how then is this new study linked to that? I guess.
Yep.
I want to understand. Thank you.
Yeah, through you, Matt. So there's a couple of things. Is I've sort of mentioned before that for any of our planning considerations there, whether they're an adopted report or draft report there, they're taking into consideration when we're assessing any DAs, for example, or any changes or alterations to buildings. For change of ownerships there, this would normally be picked up through our 337 process. So that travels around different areas of council, and they provide some information about particular things. So there's some questions that relate to, flooding a property as well. So it gets picked up through that process.
But is that process after somebody has signed a contract and is going through the conveyance period? Because I think that's an interesting question, because by then you committed to purchasing a property, and I know that there was a motion to Legat about 18 months ago that the Section 337 certificates should be actually available if somebody was inquiring about purchasing a property. And I know that in other states that's the case, so that it doesn't have to be buyer beware, but you can actually get that knowledge beforehand.
Through me, yeah, quite possibly. So that is one of the difficulties we might have with the system they're actually running. But having said that, I know not everybody actually refers to council websites and the like, but obviously we will have all that information available for people if they wish to, or if they also wish to come into council directly, then we're better provide that information to them prior to them making any decisions on any contracts they're putting in place. Mm. I can't answer to the vagaries of the 337. I'm just pointing out the fact that when we go through a 337 process, this type of stuff actually gets flagged.
I noticed that some of us looked at the resident lawyer in the room, who doesn't look like he wants to add anything to that answer. But
look, only to say that there's nothing stopping a purchaser from ordering a 337 in advance of signing a contract. And the question of whether or not 337s should be made available as part of the sale process, and whether the contract for sale should require a 337 to be annexed, is one that has been debated for decades. And certainly in other states, it is a requirement that land information certificates be annexed. But the warning on all of that is that it increases legal costs exponentially. And for the number of times where an issue is caused by not having that certificate in advance compared to the times when it could have helped, you've really got to start weighing up the cost and benefit. And all of this can be resolved as well, cheeky little plug, by getting proper advice before you sign a contract. Because there are contractual provisions.
Phone Christian Street.
Because there are things that you can do in a contract to protect a purchaser without having all of the information available. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the more important thing is people getting advice rather than having 300 pages of land information certificate that most people are not going to read anyway, and just increases the cost for the parties to the transaction.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Midgley, anything further? I just want to... Deputy Mayor Gladright.
Sorry, yeah, I've got a further question. It's a little bit off topic, but I know we've done these flood studies for Snug and Adventure Bay as well. There are three communities that are at high risk. The studies for Snug and Adventure Bay are also up on our website, is that correct? Yep, so they have been there for a while now, these studies, haven't they? It's not a new thing.
Thank you. Just briefly, I just wanted to make a contribution. This is obviously quite a significant body of work, and what's interesting about it is it puts it into contemporary language in terms it moves away from talking about sort of the one in 100 year storm events and updates it so that we now have an understanding about the annual exceedance probability. I think that what's as has been pointed out, and I think we shouldn't let this go unsaid again, it is significant that this updated study has shown us that with all the new modelling, the analytic tools, the information on climate change projections and the new analysis, that it actually has reduced the impact of flooding on Kingston Beach by about 150 properties. But that still does mean that there are, under this scenario, about 100 properties that are at risk. So it is really important that we're able to, that we've got this comprehensive report, that we facilitate some better management of those, of the potential flood impacts now and into the future, that we go through that consultation process, and that particularly for planning, but also importantly for emergency management, that we do have the knowledge that we now have about what may occur in the future. The cost does frighten me. In reading through a number of the potential options as to how we mitigate the risk, those costings are, of course, in 2021 dollars, and I'll probably add 40 or 50% onto them now if you consider what's happened with inflation in the last 2 years. So I think what we are talking about here is very much a significant investment, and one that I would hope, given the nature of the situation, that there is an opportunity to partner with federal and state governments moving forward, because this will be a substantial investment, but one that will be important for the health of the Kingston Beach community and the broader community into the future. I note what Councillor Antoli said about the 2018 flood events at Channel Court. They were obviously, those events were highly unusual, but it did impact Channel Court and surrounding areas, and I am happy to say that we have made a substantial investment in stormwater as a result of that. And in fact, there's a nice segue there into the development of the CBD. I know that there were some people in the community saying, oh gee, it's taking a long time for them to build a road. What they didn't see was the upgraded stormwater capacity that we put under the road. There was a substantial amount of infrastructure designed to future-proof the Kingston CBD against those unusual events as happened in 2018. So you can see how all of those, the learnings of things that have happened, have actually now started to flow into the infrastructure that we're putting in place and the decisions that we're making in our planning in the future. So thank you for your contributions. I will see if there are any others before I ask Councillor Midgley if she would like to sum up. Any further contributions? No? Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. Just thank you for the discussion, the questions and the response from staff. I move the motion.
I'm going to put the motion now. Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Gladright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. We move now to page 170, the financial report for June 2023, with a recommendation on page 172. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Bain and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. So we have the financial report June 2023. The report tells us the council's finishing position for the 22-23 financial year was a $740,000 underlying deficit. Some of the major contributing factors to this deficit were planning compliance revenue down $450,000, $450,000 overspend on work to repair rain damage to unsealed roads. We had $350,000 revenue decrease due to the loss of the Bruny Island State Government contract and $200,000 land tax increase. So just those items there, I think that's about $1.5 million, so quite a big decrease to compensate for. Some of this was offset by items like the additional interest income of $550,000, so we did have some pluses as well. One of the parts of the report I just want to note was under the risk section of the report, it states some negative variances were as a result of one-off costs that will not reoccur in 23-24. However, increases in depreciation and inflation-related costs will be ongoing and will require some action in the 24-25 budget discussions. So my question here is, I guess, are we confident that any of the known ongoing increases in expenditure or decreases in revenue have been incorporated into the 23-24 budget?
Mr. Jones.
No, they haven't been. The budget was prepared before we, through you, Mayor, the budget was prepared before some of the factors came to light. And an example is the revaluation of stormwater, which was a late change. At this stage, we're looking probably at an underlying deficit of around $600,000 or $700,000 next year, as a result of the stormwater change and some other changes that are happening.
Councillor Bang.
So just a follow-up question. Some of the things like the planning compliance revenue reduction and the land tax and the Bruny Island and those sorts of things, can we assume that they have been incorporated, the ones that were known?
Mr. Jones.
Yes, they have been. Again, though, to predict what compliance revenue is going to be is difficult, but yes, we've got the best guess at that.
Councillor Bain.
No, that's all. Thank you.
Any further questions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Page 170, item 4, talks about statutory fees and fines, and 69% of it comes from lost revenue or based on what we budgeted for planning. Does council have an opinion as to why that is? Is it to do with the downturn in the market, the lack of finance available? Is it that maybe people find the planning too difficult for them right now? Is it a combination of all of the above? What's the opinion?
Mr. Jones.
Through you, Mayor. It is very difficult to say. It's probably a combination of things. There was obviously a large pickup in activity in the previous few years, so you often have a downturn coming off that. I think everybody knows that the current building activity with the massive increase in costs that are going on make people hesitant to do anything, but it's one of those things that we can only put theories to it. We can't provide exact answers.
My understanding is it's also very difficult at the moment to secure a builder. Because there's so much work around. So I know that there are a number of families who have put off, you know, and still continuing to rent because they can't secure builders to do the work for them.
Yeah,
so
thank you.
It's a challenging market. Anything further? Councillor Dean.
Yeah, look, something caught my attention and I'd like it just a little bit potentially further explained. 4.2 of the report refers to the graph on 175 of the agenda, which highlights that our total cash and investments has halved in the last 12 months, but it can be offset by borrowing. So I'm no finance guru. I just want to know, when you look at the blue on that graph and you figure out that our cash has gone from 23 to 11 million, how does that work that borrowings have offset almost half the loss of cash?
Mr. Jones.
Right, through you, Mayor. So I'm just reading exactly what that was. There was a repayment of borrowings. Some of the large borrowings we had in late June were repaid, and that was part of the interest-free loans that we got for the for Kingston Park. So when we repaid it, obviously reduced the cash and reduced the borrowings amounts, so the two offset each other.
Councillor Dean.
Just to follow up then, so
if we're sitting at, you know, cash reserves, looking at the table here at this point of 3.8 million, is that a help? Well, it's not a very good question, is it? But historically, has that been a fairly stable figure?
Mr. Jones.
No, it hasn't been stable. There's been a lot of grants around the previous years, and that's inflated where it is. Traditionally, at this time, towards the end of the year, the balances in cash are lower. Of course, anticipating that come August, the first of the rate instalments come in and things like that. So this is traditionally, and Christmas as well, are the low points between rate and instalment payments.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Deputy Mayor.
On page 171, the second last dot point says profit on sale of assets is $424,000 over budget. I was just wondering what we sold. It says the sale of land and sale of assets.
We did sell a block of land, didn't we? I remember it going through. Mr. Jones. That's right.
We have sold a number of items of plant. As part of the vehicle changeover each year, we sell, you know, the vehicles and the larger trucks. I think there's one large item of plant in the last year, and that's what caused a lot of that, contributed a lot to that.
And the sale of land was the Herne Road, Blackmans Bay property that we decided to sell a couple of years ago with the funds going into the playground.
So we weren't anticipating the sale of that.
Sale of land is never budgeted for.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Any further contributions, questions? I just have one question. I just thought it would be worthwhile if we had... I don't see anywhere any reference to our current ratio, and that's normally quite a useful benchmark that... a lot of organisations would provide so that we can make a, you know, it's a way of making a quick assessment of the health of the organisation. I'm just wondering whether in future reports we could have our current ratio reported.
Through you, Mayor, yes. Current what ratio? Current asset ratio?
Yes.
Yes.
Thanks. Any further contributions? I'll put the... Oh, Councillor Bain, did you want to sum up? No. I will put the motion as moved by Councillor Bain and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Turn now to page 231. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder for the appendices. I've got a mover in Councillor Bain and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Any questions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple regarding some of your out and about activities. Just to check in how the Multicultural Advisory Group committee is going.
Oh, yep. So we've met twice so far. We have another meeting scheduled for tomorrow evening. And it's been really productive so far. A really nice, diverse group, all very enthusiastic about the fact that this is the first time that Kingborough would have a multicultural action plan or framework. We are at the point where the first step in trying to draft that is actually getting a survey out to as many people within the community as we can to ask their experiences as members of the multicultural community, you know, what it's like living in Kingborough for them, whether they've been the subject of any, you know, racist remarks, do they feel safe, do they feel included. So we have a draft of that survey that the group is going to look at tomorrow evening. We're still on track for our time frame of hopefully getting that out and distributing it as widely as we can so that we can then prepare a strategy and have it available and come to Council in October.
Great, thank you. And the meeting with Enjoy Church regarding youth activities, I think it was?
Yeah, so the Deputy Mayor and I went to meet Pastor Martin at Enjoy Church. They have quite a large very impressive, actually, facility in Merton Vale Circuit that I hadn't been to before. And just by coincidence then I found myself there for a funeral a few days later and got to actually see it in, you know, for the very good community facility that it is. And we had a really interesting discussion about the fact that they actually have a lot of space and they're well located, particularly adjacent to the indoor go-karting. And they've got like sort of, you know, half indoor basketball court. They've got an outside sort of separate shared area that could easily be adapted and a lot of meeting rooms and space. And that there would be great potential if we could work with them in relation to some youth programs. So I have put them in touch with our community development team. And likewise, they will be a really significant resource for us in terms of getting the multicultural survey out, because they said that they have, I think, about 25% of their membership come from a background where they're born overseas. So that was actually a really productive meeting and one that we really enjoyed. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. That was actually one of my questions, and I do endorse Martin and Rose to the community. I know them because my daughters go to school with their daughters, and I went to their community Christmas carols last year. And you're right, it's a beautiful modern facility. It's a real honour that they're wanting to offer it to the wider community. Mm. 10th of July, you met with our former mayor and local member Dean Winter, the Kingborough's state election priorities. Curious to know if you could summarise what they are. And second question, have we had a similar meeting with the incumbent government?
Yes. So that meeting was held at the request of Dean Winter, and that, look, it's not uncommon. Any Member of Parliament who wishes to come and have a meeting with me to be updated on, you know, activities within Kingborough, I always welcome them with open arms. And he did ask if we could provide him with a list of suggestions of projects that we were particularly keen on. And you may recall that I did circulate one around to all of you and seek some feedback. Some of the larger items that we did put to Mr. Winter were the upgrade of the Kingborough Sports Centre, which continues to be a challenge for us in terms of the cost of the of extending that facility, because we're looking at around, well, based on a couple of years ago, the costings that we got, and this was the scaled back version, to do another 4 indoor courts and to make it an 8 indoor court centre, we'd be looking at around probably $28 million. So that is obviously a project that is well outside of our scope as a council to do on our own. We did have some discussions about future opportunities that may occur in relation to the need for a car park in central Kingston, given that we know we've got some challenges with car parking. We also did talk about various roads, the desire to have a connector from Spring Farm up to Kingston View Drive. Once again, that is a project that would come at significant cost, around I think we said about four to five million, because not only do you have to put the link road through, but you have to do works on Kingston View Drive and at the intersection with Summerlees Road, because that is a particularly busy intersection because of the school as well as the sports centre. And there were other projects that were further down the list that we did talk about, and certainly it is my intention to put all of those together in a list that we would be providing to all members of Parliament, and in the hope that whenever the election would be, that people would recognise that because of the significant growth that we've had in Kingborough, that we do need to significantly upgrade some of our facilities and our infrastructure. And I think one of the frustrating things is that we are seen as a we're not seen federally as a marginally seat, we're not seen as a disadvantaged community when it comes to state elections, or we're not in the north of the state, if we're going to be honest about it. And I think it's frustrating that when we're an area experiencing such growth that we don't get political parties coming down here during election campaigns and listening to what the needs of the community are and providing election commitments that they can then carry out when they get into state government. So I would hope that we still have 2 years before an election, but I would certainly be putting the case for Kingborough very, very strongly, and I'd urge all of you as councillors, when you see a Member of Parliament, is to start waving the wish list under their noses and lobby, lobby and lobby hard, no matter which Member of Parliament you come across in the next 2 years. So your assistance would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you. That's a very helpful rundown. It's good for the community to know that we're not just sitting around hoping that they come to us. The follow-up was around whether or not any sort of similar meeting is planned with the when any of the local members in the Liberal government.
Oh, look, absolutely. I had a meeting recently with Minister Street, but we were discussing other issues. But it's certainly my intention to put our proposals to all of the current sitting MPs in Franklin, as well as any other prospective candidates when they make themselves known, and I know that Liberal MP Dean Young, I think his office indicated to me a couple of weeks ago that they'll be in touch for a meeting as well, so certainly I will be leaving no stone unturned in ensuring that our message is heard, and as I said, please help me on that journey.
We need more candidates from our community to make this a marginal seat. There you go, we need a rally cry.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. I just had a question about the mayoral donations. There was $4,545 to Linden Builders towards Madison House. I was just wondering what that was.
So Lydon Builders they undertook a project called Madison House, which is a they've done a series of houses named Madison House in various parts of southern Tasmania over the last couple of years, and this particular one was an agreement that they entered into with the state government to build a house for local residents who were in need of purpose-built housing that was for all abilities. So they had an agreement with them and they received a lot of charitable donations. And then the money was going back, any profits that they made, because they got so many people who donated various, you know, like building and building materials and labour for the project, that they made, I think it was about $370,000. Kingborough Council made a contribution towards that. They had asked us if we could contribute to sealing of the driveway, and it just got a bit complicated, so we made a cash donation instead. And that money is then going to the Variety Club of Tasmania, which then assists children from all around Tasmania. So it was a really good outcome, and Lydon Builders did a fantastic project, and I think that the family is now in the property, and it's been done to a really high standard, and it was very, very good. Further question? No? Councillor Dean.
Just one question. About July 2, you attended a Voice Yes campaign event at the Good Shed, so I'm just wondering if you might at this point be able to enlighten the community on what the sector's role is in the upcoming referendum in terms of, as you said earlier tonight, as an advocate, I guess, where we sit moving forward in the coming months.
So different councils have taken different stances in relation to this. I don't believe that as a council we need to take a position, but I'm entirely in everyone's hands if that's a debate you want to have. I think it's more of a personal preference. I attended that event because I was invited and I wanted to hear the case, the yes case, just as I've gone and heard the no case. So it certainly wasn't an event that I was speaking at, but trying to educate myself about the issues of the referendum and to determine, you know, which side I sit on with that. It was quite well attended. It was good to see people getting the information, but I think there have been a handful of councils, as I understand it, who have taken a position to support the Voice and the Yes campaign, but the Local Government Association of Tasmania does not have a formal position, and neither does the Australian Local Government Association, because it's deemed to be more of an individual question rather than a systemic one. Councillor Antoli.
Since you asked for an opinion, or I won't say debate, I would encourage you to continue on the path that you're on, to stay out of it. I think it's too inflammatory, and I note that Hobart Council is not staying out of it and is copping a lot of negative media on the socials. I've been sucked into it, and when I say sucked into it, as in people wanting me to comment, and I think it's way too inflammatory, and I think we as a council need to just stay out of it.
Yeah. And I note, as you're speaking there, Councillor Antoli, that there's a lot of head nodding around the table, and I did notice those social media debates in the last 48 hours where there were some pretty... It got pretty heated, and that was as a result of the fact that Hobart City Council had taken a side, and there was... It was sort of everybody was piling on to a couple of different councillors who were then making their voices heard on the matter. No pun intended.
And just to close, I've actually praised your diplomatic approach on the socials, and I said more mayors probably need to follow suit. So keep it up.
Thank you. Councillor Fox.
I did attend a LGAT conference. I'm not sure how long ago it was, though, when this issue was first raised, and there was a speaker from the mainland who came and... Thomas Mayo.
Yes, so Thomas Mayo did come.
He did come, and he was at the invitation of LGAT. There wasn't a no person there at the time. But I personally support the yes vote. Yes. And I think as a councillor, it's important for us to show leadership in this.
Yep. I think Thomas Mayo, he's been a significant player in all of this, and I've seen him speak at reconciliation breakfasts, and his main focus is not just the Voice but the Uluru Statement from the Heart, and that was certainly the message that I got from his from his presentation to the Legat conference last year. Was it wasn't about should you vote yes or no, but it was about this is what, if you don't know about the Uluru Statement from the Heart, this is what it is, and this is what it means to us as a people, and these are some of the steps in it. So I found that quite an educative process for those involved as well. I know that there was some feedback from the National Government, the Australian Local Government Association National Congress that the Deputy Mayor attended and I wasn't able to in June, that they did have a speaker for the yes case and they did not have a speaker for the no case, and that was created some divide amongst the participants there, that they had only presented one side of the debate, and now as somebody who's a director on ALGA, that's something certainly that the board has taken on board and is ensuring that in future that if there are any contentious issues like that, that both cases would be presented equally. Any further questions on the appendices? No. Councillor Bain, no summing up, I'm guessing. Okay, I'm going to put the motion. It's moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. We're on page 231, notices of motion. There were no notices of motion. And now we come to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. That in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items. Confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, Parks and Reserves, Mowing and Grass Control Services, Tender Assessment, AB 2306, Spring Farm to Whitewater Creek Path, Southern Waste Solutions and Rates Delegated Authority, April to June 2023. Do I have a mover and a seconder? I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Antoli. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. So that brings us to the end of the open session of Council. Thank you very much to everybody who has been watching along at home. In accordance with the Kingborough Council meetings audio recordings guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. The open session of council adjourned at 6:54 p.m.